All right, so today we're diving deep into a Supreme Court case, one that's still making waves, you know, Debs v. United States. We're going to be looking at how this 1919 decision really continues to shape how we think about free speech, especially, you know, when it butts heads with national security. And what makes this case even more interesting is the guy at the center of it all, Eugene V. Debs.
Yeah, Debs wasn't just some random dude, right? I mean, this was a five-time Socialist Party candidate for president, a major figure in the labor movement.
Huge.
So his conviction for giving an anti-war speech wasn't just some legal thing, you know?
Yeah.
It really shook things up, like politically and socially.
Or absolutely. To really get the full impact of this case, we kind of have to go back to 1918, right? World War I's in full swing, and the Espionage Act had just been amended to really clamp down on any dissent.
Yeah.
I mean, the mood was tense.
Very tense. The nation felt like, you know, it was in a fight for its survival. And so anything, any speech that seemed to be like undermining the war effort, oh, it was treated with a lot of suspicion and hostility.
Right, right. And it was right in this, you know, supercharged climate that Debs gave this famous speech in Canton, Ohio.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that speech, right?
Yeah.
Debs, he didn't come right out and tell people to dodge the draft, but he praised those who did resist it. He even called them deserving of honor, and he wove in these arguments about class struggles, which, you know, really resonated with his socialist audience.
Right.
So where do you draw that line between, you know, protected speech and a call to action that's actually dangerous?
That's the core of this whole case, right?
Yeah.
And to make things even more complicated, just a week before Debs' case, the Supreme Court had had laid out this clear and present danger test in Schenck v. United States.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a big one.
Okay, so I remember, like, vaguely the clear and present danger test from law school.
Right.
But can you break it down for our listeners? Like, what are the main principles?
Sure. It's basically a way for the court to balance free speech against the potential for, you know, for something bad to happen, especially during wartime. So it asks, does this speech, you know, is it a real and immediate threat to national security?
I mean, that sounds pretty straightforward, but I bet applying it gets pretty messy.
Oh, absolutely. The clear and present danger test raises a bunch of tough questions.
I bet.
Like, how much danger is too much? And who gets to decide? Right.
Right, right.
It's not always so cut and dry.
So how did the court apply this test to Debs and his speech?
They really zeroed in on his intent. You know, like, what was he trying to do when he gave that speech?
Yep.
And they concluded, because he praised draft resistors, that, well, he was aiming to obstruct the war effort.
Right.
And even though, you know, he didn't say, hey, everyone, break the law of the court, they looked beyond just the words themselves.
Yeah.
They considered his intentions and what the impact of his speech could be.
That's fascinating. So they were reading between the lines, like, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also interesting, right, that the court's decision, it was unanimous in this case.
That's right. Even with the wartime atmosphere, you know, emotions running high, all the justices, they agreed that Debs had crossed a line.
Wow.
I think that really tells you something about the mood at the time.
Yeah.
National unity and security. They trumped even basic freedoms like free speech.
Right, right. And we can't really talk about Debs without mentioning Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. He wrote the opinion for the court. And he was known for his sharp wit and that really insightful writing style.
Oh, absolutely. One of the most striking lines he wrote in the Debs decision is, every idea is an incitement.
Ooh, okay.
It's a powerful statement, and it gets to the heart of how complicated this case really is.
What do you think he meant by that?
You know, to me, it suggests that words have consequences. And those consequences, they go beyond just the literal meaning. Mm. Like, even if you're not directly saying, go break the law.
Right.
Your ideas, they can plant seeds, they can inspire action, and sometimes they can lead to stuff you didn't even intend.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, coming from a guy like Debs, whose words carried a lot of weight.
Right, right.
You know, people listened to him.
So it wasn't just what Debs said, but who he was and where he said it.
Exactly.
The court couldn't just focus on the words themselves. They had to look at the bigger picture.
Exactly. And that brings us to another crucial thing about Debs. You know, the lasting impact that it's had on the legal system. It's not just history. It set some core principles that we're still wrestling with today.
So let's break down those principles. What are some of the big takeaways from Debs that are still shaping how we interpret free speech?
Well, I think first and foremost, Debs really kind of cemented this idea that speech can be punished not just for, you know, directly inciting something,
right,
but also for like its potential effects and the speaker's intent. Like, yeah. It's not enough to just look at, you know, what was said.
Right.
We got to think about like the context, the audience, what was the speaker trying to do?
Right. It's almost like a legal version of like reading between the lines. You know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Trying to figure out like what they really meant, even if they didn't actually say it.
Exactly. Yeah. The court in Debs was basically saying, even if you don't say, you know, go break the law, if your words are going to lead to that,
yeah,
and if the court thinks that's what you wanted to happen,
right,
then you can be held accountable.
This idea of like punishing speech based on its potential effects, I mean, that seems pretty controversial, even today.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, where do you draw the line between, you know, something that's legitimate expression versus something that's like an actual threat?
Yeah, it's a question people have been debating for decades.
Yeah.
Critics of the Debs decision, they say it created this like bad tendency test for speech where the government could shut down any speech that they think, you know, might lead to bad stuff.
Right.
Even if it's all hypothetical, like it might not even happen.
Sounds like a slippery slope.
It is, yeah. And that's why Debs is still so relevant and so controversial, I mean.
Right.
It forces us to think about the limits of free speech and, you know, that balance between protecting individual rights, but also keeping things, you know, orderly.
Right, right. And another big principle that came out of Debs was this idea that, you know, wartime can justify, like, more restrictions on free speech.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that, like, anytime there's a national crisis, you know, our First Amendment rights are just like automatically suspended?
Not necessarily, but it does mean that courts are more likely to like defer to the government's judgment when things are crazy.
Right.
The thinking is when national security is on the line,
yeah,
the government's got to be able to like keep things under control, you know, and stop things that could hurt the country.
So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We want the government to be able to act when there's an emergency.
For sure.
But we also don't want to just like give them free rein to squash dissent or criticism just because, you know, they say it's a threat.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a tough balance.
Yeah.
And there's no easy answer. I mean, in the decades since Debs, there have been tons of cases that have, you know, tried to figure out that line between what you can say and what you can't.
So Debs really like cast a long shadow over our legal system, mm-hmm, even after all this time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a kind of a cautionary tale. You know,
yeah,
reminding us that free speech, even though it's right there in the First Amendment, it's not absolute. There are limits, and those limits, they can change depending on what's going on, you know, especially during like war or a crisis.
And it shows how our idea of like what is free speech, it keeps evolving, you know.
Absolutely.
What might have been dangerous and like subversive back in 1918,
right,
might be totally fine today.
Exactly.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. Free speech isn't like this fixed thing.
Right.
It's more like a conversation that we're always having about how to balance individual rights with what society needs.
So speaking of changing times, like how has the legal landscape actually shifted since Debs?
Yeah.
Has the clear and present danger test?
Yeah.
Like held up?
It's definitely been refined. Yeah.
Okay.
One big turning point was in 1969 with Brandenburg v. Ohio.
Okay.
That case really narrowed down the scope of the clear and present danger test.
Ah, Brandenburg. Yeah. Another like landmark First Amendment case.
Huge. Yeah.
Remind us, what was that case all about?
So in Brandenburg, the Supreme Court, they zeroed in on how imminent the threat was, like how immediate is the danger.
Okay.
They said, basically, you can't punish speech unless it's likely to cause, you know, imminent lawless action.
Right.
Like, it's not enough to just show that the speech might lead to bad things. You got to prove that's going to directly cause violence or illegal activity, like right now.
So Brandenburg raised the bar for the government to restrict speech.
Right.
Even if that speech is, like, inflammatory or offensive, it's still protected as long as it doesn't directly call for like immediate illegal action.
Exactly. Yeah. And this change in how the law thinks about these things,
yeah,
it reflects how society, you know, has become more tolerant of different viewpoints.
Right.
And this recognition that even offensive or controversial speech, you know, it deserves protection unless it's a clear and present danger of like inciting violence that's about to happen.
That's a big shift from, you know, back in the Debs era, where Just saying you were against the war could get you in trouble.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The legal landscape is totally different now than it was back then.
Yeah.
And Brandenburg was a huge part of that change.
Right.
You know, shifting the focus from potential harm to imminent harm.
Right.
Giving more protection to speech that might be unpopular or even offensive, but that doesn't pose a direct threat to public safety.
So where does that leave us today? Are we still dealing with the legacy of Debs?
Absolutely, yeah. That tension between free speech and national security, it's still a big deal, especially now with the internet and everything.
Right.
I mean, think about all the debates we're having about, like, online speech, hate speech, what should social media platforms be doing about the content they host?
Right.
These are all kind of echoes of those same big questions that the court was facing back in Debs.
Yeah.
How do we balance free speech with the need to protect against harm in a world where information spreads so fast and can have such a huge impact on people and on society as a whole?
It's crazy how a case from over a century ago,
I know, right,
can still feel so relevant to what's going on today.
That's what's so interesting about these big legal decisions, you know?
Yeah.
They grapple with these timeless questions.
Right.
And they go beyond the specific facts of the case.
Right.
And Debs, you know, with its focus on the limits of free speech during times of crisis,
yeah,
it still speaks to us today, you know? It makes us think about how complicated this fundamental right is,
right,
especially in a world that's constantly changing.
And it really highlights how, like, the law is a reflection of society's values, you know, and their anxieties, too.
Totally.
Like, what might have been a threat to national security back then might be totally protected speech now.
Right.
And then we have all these new challenges, like online hate speech, that make us rethink, like, where are the boundaries of free expression in this digital age?
And that's why these legal precedents like Debs are so important.
Right.
They give us a framework for dealing with these complicated issues, even as the world around us keeps changing.
Right.
They remind us that the law isn't just this set of rules written in stone.
Right.
It's more like a process that's always adapting
to
new challenges and how our norms as a society evolve.
It makes you wonder, like, if Debs went before the Supreme Court today, would they still, like, uphold his conviction?
Mm-hmm.
Would they even see his speech the same way as they did back in 1919?
That's a great question. It's like a thought experiment,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's impossible to say for sure, of course. But we can kind of guess, based on how the court has been interpreting the First Amendment in recent decades.
Right.
You know, we'd have to think about how they see the clear and present danger test now, especially after Brandenburg.
Right.
And how that would apply to what Debs said.
Would they still be focused on his intent? Or would they care more about, like, what his speech actually said?
Yeah.
And how likely it was to actually incite, you know, immediate illegal activity?
Right.
Would they see the whole wartime context differently now after 9/11 and everything?
All good questions. And the answers probably depend on a bunch of things.
Yeah.
You know, what arguments each side makes, who's on the court, what the political climate is like, even what the public thinks.
Right.
It's a good reminder that how the law is interpreted, it's not always simple, you know?
Yeah.
It's affected by all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Historical precedents, what our values are today, and how the social context is always evolving.
And it brings up another interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could today's challenges, things like the pandemic, it worries about election security, even like all the misinformation online.
Yeah.
Could that be used to justify, like, more limits on free speech?
It's a scary thought.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible. I mean, we've already seen how some governments used the pandemic, you know, to justify limiting gatherings and stuff. And sometimes that ended up stepping on First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
The possibility that governments could use crises or even just perceived threats to limit free speech.
It's
something we always got to be on guard against.
Right.
And cases like Debs remind us to be vigilant. You know,
right, to protect those freedoms.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a reminder that we got to protect those freedoms. You know, they're not a given.
Exactly.
So how do we do that? Like, how do we protect and preserve free speech in, you know, in today's world?
Yeah.
Especially with all this information and misinformation and everything in between. What steps can we take to make sure this right, this essential right stays strong?
It's a tough one. And it needs a multi-pronged approach, you know?
Okay.
I think first and foremost, we got to cultivate, like, a culture of open and honest dialogue about how important free speech is, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it challenges us.
Right.
We need to be willing to, like, engage with different views and defend the right of others to speak their minds, even when we don't agree with them.
Absolutely. And education plays a big role here, too, right?
I for sure.
Like, we need to teach ourselves and future generations, you know, about our First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
And all the historical struggles that have shaped how we understand free speech.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's only through knowledge and awareness that we can really push back against attempts to chip away at these freedoms, you know?
And we got to be careful about, you know, even well-meaning attempts to restrict speech in the name of, like, security or the greater good.
Right.
Because, you know, history shows that even what seem like small limits on free speech can have huge consequences down the line.
Absolutely.
And once those rights are gone, it's incredibly hard to get them back.
Yeah. Debs is it's a stark reminder of that, you know?
Right.
Vigilance is the price of liberty.
Ooh, I like that. Well, as we wrap up our deep dive into Debs v. United States, let's leave our listeners with a final question to ponder.
Okay.
How do we strike that balance, you know, between needing security and preserving free speech?
Right.
In our world that's getting more and more complex and interconnected all the time.
It's a question that every generation has to grapple with, you know?
Yeah.
We've got to learn from the past and be aware of the challenges ahead.
It's a question with no easy answers.
For sure.
But it's a conversation we need to keep having.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Debs v. United States. We hope you've come away with a deeper understanding of how complicated free speech is and why it's so important to protect it, especially in a world that's always changing.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for listening, everybody.